The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show on KVOI. You can listen to KVOI at 10:30 a.m. or live stream at kvoi.com. Also, if you'd like to know anything more about the Buckmaster Show, go to buckmastershow.com. Ray, it's a pretty good afternoon today. The weather is fantastic, isn't it?
Certainly is. I can't complain, man.
I'm telling you, Bill is enjoying his vacation in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I can only imagine the weather's a little bit better there.
Yeah, a little bit. He and Ann are having fun. I've been looking at the pictures that he's posting, and just absolutely beautiful beaches, water, and stingrays and starfish. And one of the things I've always liked about Bill is no matter how old he gets, he still has this incredible sense of wonder about the world, and he likes to share it with other people. And if you'd like to see what he does share, buckmastershow.com or on Facebook, Bill Buckmaster. We've got an interesting lineup today, Ray. We've got Irina Zuckerman, who is a human rights attorney. She has an incredible story, immigrated to the United States after the thawing of relations with the old Soviet Union. We have Nick Pearson, who's running for Congress in CD3, which is always difficult for a Republican to do. And then we have Felicia Chu, who's running for the Amphi School District. What I'd like to do is, if Irina Zuckerman is on the line, I'd like to go to her and start chatting with her. Irina, are you there?
Yes, hi, how are you?
I am well. First off, tell us a little bit about yourself. I've met you through a mutual friend many years ago on Facebook, and I have been following your writings and your career ever since, probably well over 10 years now. And one of the things I've always liked about your writing is how thorough it is. It doesn't have a lot of diatribe and political opinion as your main focus, but the facts of what's happening, particularly in the Middle East. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born in Ukraine. I came here with my parents in 1995. That was actually after most of the wave of immigration of Russian-speaking Jews. Most of them came in 1989. We came a few years later when Ukraine was already an independent state. I went to most of my schooling here in the United States. I studied at Fordham University. For my undergrads, I got BAs in Middle East Studies and International Studies with a minor focus on Latin America. I went to Fordham Law School straight after that, where I focused my studies on international law and national security. For a few years after graduating, I practiced law as any other legal practitioner, but eventually I returned to national security and human rights focus that were of my primary interest throughout my academic career, and this is what I'm doing now.
One of the things that has always interested me about you is when you started writing and blogging, you saw and focused on things that many others, particularly in the mainstream media, just don't focus on. They tend to focus on blood, guts, gore, conflict, rock throwing, anything that shows violence in the Middle East. And when I started seeing your writing, you were writing about cultural exchanges, particularly with food. You've started writing about, you know, the various other Middle Eastern countries that are often ignored by the mainstream media, particularly Morocco. And I've just found that absolutely fascinating as you delved into the relationships between these other countries that are rarely mentioned with the big players, whether it be Iran, China, Russia, of course, Israel and Syria and Turkey and Egypt. Tell us where your vision comes from, where your voice comes from to talk about the daily lives and the daily things that are being shared amongst these countries that others just aren't looking at.
I think it's a big mistake and a disservice, not just to the community of the national security practitioners or analysts or politicians, but essentially to everybody, to let the media define who are the big players and what is important. Because as a matter of course, they will inevitably focus on sensationalism to the exclusion of what is more important, which is the everyday patterns that inevitably comprise most of life. And I think that any country has a potential to become a major player, and just because certain media outlets, limited in number, focus on a few countries and don't see entire continents, not just countries, doesn't mean that there aren't major developments taking place, such as with Morocco. Most of the people in the U.S. seem to have been surprised by Morocco's recent break with Iran, for instance. Those who were watching closely for a number of years should not be surprised at this development. And understanding a country's political, national security interests also comes from understanding its culture. The way regular people think, not just government decisions, are made. Because Morocco, one of the interesting things about Morocco is that there is no significant separation between the interests of people and the government. There is this inherent assumption that a monarchy cannot be in any way attuned to the interests and to the thinking of its people. That's not necessarily the case. So this is one example where I found that actually being close to regular people and identifying with individuals helped me understand the political decision making as well.
One of the interesting things about Morocco is they've had a civil war going on for years and years and years and years. Back in the mid-80s, one of the big issues was a terrorist organization known as the Polisario, and Morocco had built a berm pretty much separating the Polisario from the rest of the kingdom. And nobody was really saying anything about that. But what changed is who started supporting the Polisario. Who are those people that are now supporting the Polisario?
I would actually redefine this conflict as an insurgency by a small group of terrorists rather than a civil war. Morocco is not at war with its own population, and most of people residing in Western Sahara are peaceful people. Many of them have moved into Morocco, and there is no major conflict, and there has not been one.
Their economy is actually doing quite well for the rest of North Africa, compared to the rest of North Africa, is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, I would say what Morocco is going through is something called the Moroccan Renaissance. It's flourishing economically, it's rising as one of the leaders in Africa, its military is one of the strongest in Africa, and culturally it's hosting dozens of festivals every year, and it also participates in regional and as well as Middle Eastern cultural events every year.
Let me get back to that question of who's been supporting this insurgency called the Polisario. How long has Hamas / Hezbollah, the Iranian agents, been supporting Polisario?
Well, Hezbollah has actually been involved in Africa in general for quite some time. Iran's involvement in Africa goes back to the 80s. Iran and the Soviet Union, which was one of the initial backers of Polisario, have had a long and productive intelligence relationship going back to the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And they've developed very similar methods of waging influence around the world. So Africa as a continent was a major player for Soviet Union and Iran going back to the 80s. Hezbollah's presence has become more noticeable over the past decade or so, but Iran has always been there. It's been there for a very long time.
And basically, the split between Morocco and Iran came over proof that Hezbollah and the IRGC were supporting the Polisario. Is that correct?
The current split, yes. But Morocco and Iran have not had a good relationship for a very long time. They've had previous splits in the past. Morocco took issue with Iranian interference with Bahrain. And the backing of Shia-based terrorism in the Middle East, and they've had issues. So this was more of a final straw rather than an unexpected development.
Irina, I want you to hang on for one more segment while we go to the break. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owners Steve and Sherry do a great job with the European baked goods, the breads, the pastries, the cakes, the brownies. They're open for lunch right now. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be back.
In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays live during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com. I believe in starting over. I can see that your heart is true. I believe in good things coming back to you. You're the light that lifts me higher, so bright to guide me through.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. My name is Jim Kelly, and Bill Buckmaster graciously allows me to host his show on occasion while he's on vacation, and I'm very grateful for it. I love doing what I do when I'm on the Buckmaster Show. We're speaking with Irina Zuckerman, a human rights attorney and a very active writer for the Times of Israel, The Monitor. Am I missing some of the publications that you write for, Irina?
Well, I frequently am a columnist for the Morocco World News, and I also write for a number of other publications. I occasionally contribute to the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. Those are more analytical pieces rather than op-ed pieces, and I occasionally write for J-Post and other publications as well.
Outstanding. I do my best to read them as they come into my feed. Irina, one of the things that I want to discuss was, how does the rest of the world that you travel often throughout the Middle East, North Africa, Africa, Israel, what do they think about President Trump's administration and how he's handling the issues today, particularly in comparison to the last 8 years of the feckless foreign policy that we had under the Obama administration?
I think absolutely everybody, most of the countries that are already aligned with the U.S., we're very hopeful about this administration's stand against Iran and the potential for closer alliance with these countries. I think now with Secretary of State Pompeo, they're even more optimistic than under Tillerson, to be honest. I think many of the countries were somewhat impatient with the lack of this administration's response to Iran's hegemonic aggression in the Middle East and other parts of the world. But I do find that overall, we find it a welcome change from the Obama administration, which actively supported Iran.
One of the things I found interesting is that in the recent elections for the Iraqi parliament, the Shiites actually won a majority. Is that correct? Normally, is not Iraq a Sunni nation? And weren't they almost always at war with the Shiites in one form or another within their own country?
Actually, most of the people there are Shia. And under Saddam Hussein, it was the Sunni minority that was in power. But yes, sectionalism, sectarian battles were a part for the course for many years. There was an opportunity to cement some sort of a unity government after Saddam Hussein was ousted. Unfortunately, that was mishandled. And right now, the situation is very, very delicate. There is a significant concern about Iran's manipulation of Iraq towards its own end. It has built a land corridor connecting Iraq to Syria, and it's looking to build the continuation of it to Lebanon. The Iraqi government has been swaying towards Iran for a number of years. Right now, the decisive victor in the elections is Muqtada al-Sadr. Al-Sadr is a nationalist. He's been aligned with Iran in the past, but has shifted away towards now being backed by the United States and Saudi Arabia.
Well, with the Shia majority now in power in the parliament, do you think that the nationalism will be stronger, or will it be weakened and a more leaning towards Iran?
I think that Sadr specifically, for a while, may play the nationalist card against Iran. That said, he is neither trustworthy nor is likely to be particularly effective in that regard. First, he himself is seen by many to be a self-interested opportunist who is not to be trusted. So, at the first he will take the U.S. and Saudi support and their money, he will play along and make noises against Iran, but at the opportune moment, he will betray his backers. That's the consensus of many people who have studied him well.
Now, this takes us to some other issues. You were talking about the superhighway to Syria. We're now discussing what's going to happen to the Kurds, what's happening with Turkey, with Syria, what role is Iraq and Iran playing in all of that. And now we have players like Iran and China who are also stepping up activity in Syria. What's going on, and what are we looking at the near future?
Iran, despite some claims that it's going to back off now, is actually deeply embedded in both Iraq and Syria. So I don't see them moving out of there anytime soon. U.S. and Europe may end up squeezing Iran financially, but it will look to compensate for its losses through closer alliance with China, with which it has a very close trade relationship with Russia, in Africa and in other countries. China just concluded a major free trade deal with Turkey. So while they have their differences over the issues of Uyghurs in China and other issues, China's interests in Syria are primarily economic. It's also looking to build a base. But ultimately, for now, it's looking to...
We just lost her. Oh, boy. Looks like we lost our guest. It happens. It happens. The phone lines go down sometimes. Dr. Zuckerman, thank you so very, very much for your time. I appreciate everything that you were saying, and I'm sorry that we did get cut off. In the meantime, Ray, we've got some folks coming up. We've got Nick Pearson, who's running for CD3. You and I both know how very, very difficult it is for a Republican to run in that district. Still trying to figure out how a congressperson could literally abandon half their district and still get reelected. Go figure. We've got Felicia Chu coming up for the AmFi School District, obviously with Red for Ed and with many of the issues that are going on. Does it look like we might have Dr. Zuckerman back? I certainly hope so. We have Dr. Zuckerman back? Irina, do we have you back?
Looks like we do have her back. Hang on a sec. There you go.
Irina, do we have you back?
Yes.
Oh, outstanding. My apologies. I have no idea which end it broke at, but let's get back to what we're talking about with regards to Syria. So we've got these big players. China's wanting to move in. China has economic interests, or is creating economic interests for itself in Syria. And it's three trade deals with Turkey, which is also interesting. What does Turkey bring to the table for China, and what is China bringing to the table for Turkey?
Essentially, goods of every imaginable kind. Also, China looks to potential other energy players. It has already a trade deal going on in oil with Iran. Turkey is also looking to diversify its own options with respect to gas, and it's building pipeline in Syria with Russia, for instance. So China is a potential energy player, energy goods player, but it's also a potential for workers.
When China goes into these deals, are they just managing money, or do they actually have people on the ground managing factories who are part of sort of the bureaucracy and administrations of the various partnerships that occur with other countries?
China has a pattern of activity that's the same across the board, whether it's in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Central Asia, in Africa, or in now Syria, where it's going to be handling much of the reconstruction. China brings in its own people. It does not employ local people. It works on creating infrastructural projects. Some are more successful than others. And then it leaves taking all its people with it. Some have characterized this pattern as almost colonialist in that the local populations do not benefit from potential work.
Wow. Whereas with most European and American companies, it's managed by the Americans and or the Europeans, but the work is actually going to the locals that actually end up doing the work for most big projects.
Absolutely, or at least they're joint ventures where both populations benefit. China has the same pattern across the board, and that has caused a great deal of dissatisfaction in many countries. At the same time, it looks to take over ports and other infrastructural centers, such as in Pakistan and Sri Lanka. It looks to basically become a presence.
Would it be a positive or a negative, do you think, if China recreated Mogadishu Somali ports?
I mean, China's presence overall at the end of the day is not a positive. It can be a limited, it may have a limited positive effect in pushing certain countries to stabilize, to handle some of the security matters, because China is not looking to risk its own investments. But at the same time, China is looking towards hegemony, not partnership with anybody. So it's not a welcome development for the United States or the West or, frankly, even local communities.
Irina, thank you so very much for your thoughts today. I've been wanting to have you on the show for so long, and I really appreciate your contributions to it today. If anybody wants to know more about Irina Zuckerman, irinazuckermanblogspot.com. Read the Times of Israel, the Jewish Post, the Monitor, the Moroccan International. She's a good read, and she dives into things and detail that you don't get on mainstream media. Irina, thank you so very, very much. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You can explore historic downtown Silver City, visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Whatever you want to do, for a complete listing of the things to do and great places to stay and visit, visit southwestnewmexico.org.
Tell me, when will you be mine? Tell me, quando, quando, quando?
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Humane Society of Southern Arizona's new location is open at 635 West Roger Road. Come fall in love with our pet-friendly cafe. Check out our giant cat habitats or meet a new dog friend in our doggy play yards. You can also bring your pet in for their vaccinations or spay-neuter surgery at our new state-of-the-art clinic. Come see all that we have to offer you and your pet at 635 West Roger Road. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona, saving your future best friend.
This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
And welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. The phone number, if you want in on this conversation, is 520-790-2040. Or listen live stream, kvoi.com. I have in studio with me Mr. Nick Pearson, who's running for Congress in Congressional District 3 as a Republican. He does have a primary to get through. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Nick, and about how the primary race is going right now.
Well, if you want a little background, I was born in Nogales, and all my family's from Sonora, and my mother's from Sinaloa. And my dad taught school in the Tohono-O'odham and the White Mountain Apache Indian Reservations, where I grew up. So I've had quite a varied background. I was blessed by the opportunity to learn the Mexican culture on the border and the Native American culture on two different reservations. So and then plus the big city, I've had that big city experience, so quite varied experiences.
Now, you were, prior to deciding to run for Congress, you were a financial advisor for almost 40 years with Northwest Mutual?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And you built up a very nice business right here in Tucson in southern Arizona, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So let's get straight to it. Let's find out what's going on, because you have two things to get through. One is a primary against another candidate uh-huh. who is fairly well known in the district. He was chairman of Legislative District 2, mm-hmm. which encompasses both Congressional District 3 and parts of Congressional District 2, basically from 22nd Street all the way to Nogales. Here in Tucson, from Tucson to Nogales, and then you go all to Yuma, and then the district also goes up to Maricopa. Is that
yes,
correct?
The West Valley up
okay.
there.
Okay, so here's my big question uh-huh. for you, and for your primary opponent as well. What makes District 3 different from every other district in the state of Arizona, and their perception, the people's perception in District 3, what is their perception of the successes and or failures of our present administration under President Trump?
Well, the thing that's very different about Legislative District 3 is the large representation of Democrats in the district. We're outnumbered more than 2-1 to Republicans, and it's an unusual district just because you run into different pockets. And some of the pockets are very friendly and others are not so friendly. So it's It's a mixed bag.
When you're down in Nogales, Nogales has pretty much been abandoned by the present congressman in Congressional District 3, which is Raul Grijalva.
Yes.
Dyed in the wool, Democrats, and they finally elected a Republican mayor. Do you see some leeway in there? And is their resentment against Grijalva strong enough that they would support a Republican who supports the present administration's presidency?
Well, right now, the mayoral race in Nogales is going to be heavily contested. There's last count was five candidates for the mayoral race.
Wow.
And most of the candidates announce themselves as Democrats so that they have a chance to run. However, I've been very well received in Nogales. Our family name is well known in Nogales, and I've been very well received, and I'm going to have strong support from Nogales.
What about Maricopa and Yuma? How are they doing?
Maricopa, I've got real strong support there, and Yuma, the same there. It's starting to grow.
Excellent. Yeah. In terms of fundraising, mm-hmm. Have you been able to crack that bar that the Republican National Committee sets for candidates to become a contender for the Young Guns program or anything like that? Should you win the primary, would you then be eligible for RNC support at that point?
Well, I think I'll become eligible for support before the primary's over.
Excellent. Good. Good. What are some of the big issues? Now, according to you, it's immigration, economy, and what's your third issue?
Well, protecting the border is a big issue. For me, though, one of the other issues that's very underreported is the poverty in the district. You go to corners of the district and you've got a lot of underemployment, and the economic and living conditions need to be improved. So those areas haven't been addressed, and in order to address that, we have to bring in better jobs. And that's not just in the poor areas of Yuma or Nogales, but you know, also in Pima County as well. I mean, you look at what's happened here in Pima County, you can attribute a lot of that legacy to Grijalva, because essentially for many years he was chasing away jobs. In fact, he still does that in the district.
What would be an example of him chasing jobs away?
Well, the boycott Arizona, for one, that kept away a lot of people. It kept away a lot of conventions. He's not business friendly. That's really a huge, huge thing. And people, when they become aware of what has happened, people become subservient to the government in the form of government handouts.
Has he, you know, first off, has Congressman Grijalva done anything about the issue? And do you have a solution for the issue of the lack of banking opportunities for people on the border? Some of the banking laws that came in under Obama mm-hmm. literally shut down banks in Nogales,
right.
particularly community banks, so that farmers, distributors, all of that could get crops across the border and be able to finance growing them.
Right.
And they're in just north of Nogales. So all those, you know, brokers of produce, they were having a tough time.
Right. Well, the people that have been well-grounded in the community, those business people, they've managed to find workarounds to the banking problem. I think the biggest roadblock is for new businesses, and of course you see, I mean it's a tough business to get started in, and you typically see a large turnover. So maybe at times before they got the workarounds, you had more a slightly higher turnover in produce startups there in Nogales.
Do you have some legislation that you would like to produce? When you get to Congress, that, you know, what are the kinds of legislations that are going to best help Congressional District 3?
Well, the main thing is to work in the community to find out what the main issues are that help is needed. And that's where I would start. I mean, we've already identified areas that need to be addressed. Immigration, I think enforcing employment laws as far as hiring somebody who's doesn't have the proper work credentials is very important, and I think there should be some legislation in that area. And there's a lot of issues, and I'll be addressing those as we go along.
Outstanding. Nick, thank you so very much for being here. I'm glad that we get to have these interviews on occasion. And good luck in your primary. If you want to know more about Nick Pearson, nickpearsonforcongress.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's it.
nickpearsonforcongress.com. That's P-I-E-R-S-O-N.
F-O-R Congress.
And F-O-R Congress. So, enjoy the run. I know it's tough to run, and I know, but it's also a lot of fun meeting the people that are out there.
That's the most enjoyable aspect.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Thanks, Jim.
You bet, Nick. This portion of the Bill Buckmaster Show is brought to you by Green Things. Some really exciting things are happening from Green Things and Zocalo Fine Mexican Imports. Zocalo at 2924 East Broadway is moving soon to a new location on the 13-acre Green Things site on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. I was just up there Monday looking around, getting some ideas for some heat signature reduction landscaping for my own home. And I highly recommend Green Things. They're terrific people out there. So right now, take advantage of great pre-moving sale items at Zocalo near the corner of Country Club and Broadway. And there's a link to the Zocalo website at buckmastershow.com and always at Green Things.
I'm not surprised, not everything lasts. I've broken my heart so many times I stop keeping track. Talk myself in, I talk myself out. I get all worked up, then I let myself down. I tried so very hard not to lose it. I came up with a million excuses. I thought of every possibility.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust.
That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
I love seeing you happy. I miss seeing that smile.
And welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. My name is Jim Kelly. Bill has graciously allowed me to guest host for him when he goes on vacation. And I enjoy the daylights out of it. I love hanging out with Ray Allen. And I get to talk to Doug Martin and Ed and Alexander and see the old gang. They're terrific people. Today, in this last segment, I have Felicia Chu, who is a friend of mine, and she ran for city council, and she is now running for the Amphi School Board in the Amphi School District here in Tucson. Tell us a little bit first about you, and then we'll talk about the Amphi School District.
Sure. So first of all, hi, everybody. Felicia Chu here. A little bit about me. I'm a mom, and my son is just actually this morning, I was telling Jim off air that he just promoted from grade 5. So tomorrow's his last day in the Amphi District at elementary school, and he's going to be going to Amphi Middle School. I have been super involved with schools. I've been a teacher for over 20 years, originally started in California. I've taught in New Mexico on the Zuni Indian Reservation, also in Gallup, New Mexico. We moved out here to Tucson in 2011. I've taught for Tucson Unified, for Amphi, also Flowing Wells. And so a lot of experience in education that I have, and I have a bunch of different ideas for how we can improve our education system for Amphi kiddos.
What I find interesting is number one, you've worked for a lot of different school districts, and you've been through a lot of different economic situations in terms of where you teach, particularly in New Mexico and things like that. So you're used to a school district that is diverse, particularly with the issues and the challenges that Amphi has with a very, very low economic status. Right. I mean, what, something like 75% of the residents of the Amphi district are making less than $20,000 a year as a family.
Sure. Yeah.
As a family.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
It is.
Let's talk a little bit about this Red for Ed movement that occurred recently, where teachers basically walked out, demanded a higher pay. They got it. And now school districts are saying, well, we're going to define educator as more than just a classroom teacher. If you're on the board, how would you define what, particularly within regards to raising that pay 20% over the next 5 years, how would you define educator, and where would you put the raises?
So to me, an educator, all of us are educators, Jim. I mean, parents, you, myself, the kids educate one another also. So when I look at the Red for Ed demands that happened, there were actually 5 of them. One of them was the teacher pay. And I think that the reason it was This is my opinion. The reason I think it was put first was to really kind of shake people up and say, what, 10-20%? You know, it's one of those in advertising, you grab somebody's attention somehow. Yeah. But they did also talk about funding for support staff. That was in there as well. And so basically, I think this is the thing. We need to look at education the way it is. And we actually need to, I don't want to use the word reform, because reform kind of scares people. Mm-hmm. But we need to rethink how we are using our budget. We need to rethink how we are using community members. Because like I said, everybody is an educator. Community members are educators. If we can have these partnerships established with older people who are in the communities, who maybe are starting to suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's even, they can come in. They can still do these day-to-day things and engage with their kids. There are studies that show people who are experiencing early dementia, early Alzheimer's, if they have these constant connections with the community, that helps them. So education is more than just the school district, and that's what I want to bring in. So going back to what I would do when we talk about policies and we talk about budget, I really feel like we can we're wasting money in a lot of places, so we can tighten that up, and then we can also have policies that allow us to have these partnerships with the community organizations.
Okay. With regards to school safety, which is a huge issue,
yes.
You and I have discussed this privately, mm-hmm. But what's it going to take to secure a school from, and these are things that we deal with in our schools already, mm-hmm. Children who are being pulled back and forth between, by mm-hmm. parents, domestic violence issues. Yeah. Those kinds of things. We have things in place now to keep bad guys out of school.
Sure.
But when the bad guy is a student, what are the policies? What are the things that are going to make the school safe and empower the community mm-hmm. as well as school officials to be able to keep bad guys out?
Sure. So I would really like to have a lower student-teacher ratio. And I know people are thinking, wait a minute, Felicia, how are you going to do that? You're going to bring in more people and have to pay more staff? And that's where this community connection is really important. Because every time I've had my own class, I'll usually have some sort of community member who comes in and helps out with me. We can have foster grandparents. Flowing Wells does an excellent job of that. And that's something AmFi can replicate as well. And once you have these extra bodies who are in there developing these relationships with kids, we can then notice sooner if there's something that's a little bit off, if there's something that's, you know, not quite right. DCS, as educators, we are mandated reporters. However, we also know DCS is, you know, really backed up. And so it's hard to get their support services. So instead of having to go to DCS, if we can do things in our community by having individuals who notice there's something going on with the kid, notice something going on with the family, and have that relationship, then we are going to hopefully be able to avoid these more. School resource, I know you want to talk too, and I know we're limited on time. School resource officers are also something that can be excellent. I've been working with TPD for many years, and when in California we had school resource officers, TUSD we have some school resource officers. I know there's going to be pushback from some people who are worried about people policing our students more.
What about RFIDs and card entry systems? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, why not spend the money up front for technology as opposed to constantly, you know, dealing with personnel issues and raising pays and all this kind of stuff? Technology's cheap. Once it's cheap in the long run. What about technology?
So technology, I brought this up when I ran for city council. The Tucson House has gone to technology. And if you've heard my talking about that, it's terrible. You've got people and they're fornicating in the lobby because they follow somebody into the Tucson House and they get in there and they're selling drugs. There's a lot of problems. So I really don't like that idea. I'm a strong supporter of technology and 21st century learning. But something that we have done at La Cima is we have actually had, we kind of close out all of the other doors and all the kids come through the front door. They all have their ID badges. They also get checked for their uniforms, which is a whole nother story.
Right.
But, you know, it's
It's a way to monitor who's coming in. What I read in the article is that the young man came in, he had a long oversized jacket, he had his shotgun under there. And when you've got 3-4 people who know these kids and they can see them and interact with them.
They know their face. They know they that is one thing. Is
exactly.
Recognizing what kind of game face did the kid have on that day?
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, I agree with you. Felicia, thank you very much for being here.
Sure.
I really enjoyed interviewing you. I've always wanted to.
Yep.
And again, thank you so much
I
for being here.
I appreciate you taking me
Bill,
here.
Bill, come home soon. I miss you, buddy. and you all have a great day. This is Jim Kelly for the Bill Buckmaster Show. Good afternoon.